The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Have I ever told you how once I was walking down a street in New York and I was talking to a friend excitedly about something I was passionate about, and this woman walked by and she clearly had overheard me, and she turned right in front of me and she said, "From your mouth to God's ears." From your mouths to God's ears. So good to see all of you. Eric Hoffer, in his book, The True Believer, says human beings have two basic desires. The desire to be known as special and unique, and the desire to belong. And we live holding both of those. It makes sense. We need connection and community. Infant monkeys who are given food and water and warmth and shelter wither and die without touch. Human beings need attachment to thrive, to even understand and know ourselves. We are connected creatures who need connection. When we are afraid, there is the instinct to fight or flee or freeze, but researchers have noticed that women under stress showed another response, the one to tend and befriend. And after a very scary or even stressful experience, what quiets our nervous system, researchers have shown, and my daughter shared from one of her classes, is either intense physical activity or connection with others. A hug, sympathy, return to the pack. We human beings, we want to be special, to be seen for all of our particular gifts, struggles, loves, and loved for our perspective, for our personality, known as we are, the one of us in all of creation ever. That ever will be as us, never to be repeated. We want to be known as this person and loved for being this person. And we want and need to be connected and welcomed as a member of a larger beloved community, both. Inclusion, it strikes me, is the word for communities that know and see and live this dynamic of need as something that they practice for each other, all of it. But knowing what it means to serve this need requires some wisdom. Offering others the gift of inclusion to this nation, for instance, has missed some parts of creating a culture that welcomed people's uniqueness, at least historically. For a long time, there was that assimilationist ideal that kind of missed half the boat in the discussion we're having this morning, the one that asked some people to melt their uniqueness into a generic sameness as the price for admission to this country. It's the same assimilationist ideal that my mother encountered when she immigrated from Holland at age 15. I don't think anyone handed her the pamphlet as she crossed into American territory explaining the rules of engagement. My mother is still very Dutch. She loves tulips. We always have a cup of tea at afternoon time and stroop waffles. And my Dutch mother and all of her siblings did as much as they could, as quickly as they could, to blend in, and the pressures around them in the community in Michigan they came to encouraged them to do that. The faster they could blend in, the safer they'd be. and they could blend in. I know families, I bet you do too, that forbade their children from talking the language of their country of origin when they moved to the United States. It was an act of fierce love to force everyone to learn the new language and lose their differences, at least all the apparent ones they could, as quickly as possible. And there is power and logic in that. It's not actually clear that we human beings generally, even evolutionarily, are wired to love difference. I sometimes wonder if why the Scandinavian countries that I've visited have been so successful in a generous socialist set of policies that they have so much more racial and cultural uniformity so that people can literally see themselves in the other. There, but by the grace of God, feels easier when we look the same, I suppose. So if you want grace for your kids, you might reason you want to force them to blend in as much as they can, as fast as they can. It's about survival. But we know the flaws in this ethic. How some can't blend in if the standard is some sort of standard of generic whiteness, for instance. How that standard sets those who can't blend in for hardship or even death. How we miss what they have to teach us when we ask people to give up their uniqueness. Valerie Kaur, in her memoir and manifesto of revolutionary love, See No Stranger, knows how it feels to be the other, inescapably, as a Sikh woman and a fourth-generation Californian. Her family came and settled as farmers. I don't know if any of you have driven, and I don't know the direction because I'm horrible with directions, and my husband left, so I couldn't ask him to help me. But you know when you drive out of the city in a certain direction into farm country? I remember seeing these billboards with turbaned Sikh men, it was in this case, who were running for office or were a local lawyer and being just floored by it. What is it? Oh, I thought you were going to tell me the area, the direction, but we'll get the direction later. These folks are Sikh, of course, or Sikh, from the, many of them from the region in India, it's originally the Punjab region, settled for generations. I should know that. I should have been prepared. Years ago in Washington, D.C., at a an outdoor market, I found a label that was originally on a crate that had a turbaned man, a Sikh man, and he was holding out a crate of oranges with California landscape behind him. It's framed in our kitchen as it has been for decades. They are us. But Sikhs stand out. They're supposed to. In India, they're known for their large size, for their reputation as fierce warriors. Their turbaned head covers their, if they're traditional Sikhs, their uncut hair, which is one of the five articles of their faith, that long uncut hair, like the bracelet or karda that they wear, or the ritual dagger that they carry on them if they are honoring the five visible articles of faith. And all of it was supposed to make them visible. Sikhs do not hide, Valerie Kaur's grandfather told her. She writes, "We couldn't. These articles were meant to make Sikhs visible so that we could never hide in a crowd or for the fight for justice." It was a gift, and the particular challenge of Sikh immigrants to the U.S. in a nation where whiteness is still the litmus test of true belonging, to not blend in this way after 9/11. Carr says that 12 Sikhs were killed from the immediate post-9/11 violence. Racism made them targets. Christian nationalism will make them targets. Fear of what is different will make them targets. And yet to read about Sikhism is to witness one of the most beautiful wisdom traditions. Sikhs were commanded to be visible, to defend the weak, to be gentle, the notions of justice. But most people will never get there. As Carr writes, we live in a culture that makes us strange to ourselves and to each other. And those forces of othering that play against the call to full inclusion, to belonging that includes allowing people their uniqueness, it's out there in Technicolor lately, isn't it? This week, we saw more of the growing attempt of those in power to use their power to justify shaving off the differences among us, forcing conformity or tossing out the different ones. This week, government officials sent out a memo that their employees cannot use pronouns in the signature line of their emails or they will be fired. And there is now no option to have a third gender in passports or driver's licenses if the president has his way. And one trans friend and colleague said they heard a story of someone who went to attempt to change their driver's license this week, actually to conform to the new rules, and had the document seized. We cannot get an abortion or certain kinds of reproductive care now, we women. All around us, the message is clear: you will conform and be controlled. There will be a single narrative, and we will teach you who you can and cannot be safe and to belong here. So we start erasing? Is that the answer? We be a little less unique, the person that you and I feel we are, so the world, so their world, whoever they are, is under control the way they want it? Do we ban the turban and the uncut hair and the ritual dagger? What about the ferocity that would defend justice and the weak? That's also part of that difference. And we try to ban trans folks from being trans folks or getting the care they want. But what do we ban too? The trans woman who fought hard to know who she is and claim it and gives us all the permission to enjoy the joy of what it might mean to do that for ourselves? To claim who it is we're meant to be? Cole Arthur Riley, the creator of Black Liturgies, wrote, "You learn belonging as competition." Are we learning belonging as competition? It's you or me. But what about us? Alok Vaid Menon, a non-binary writer and performer and artist and activist, in an interview in June 2022 with the ACLU, captured the perspective I think we need to be reminded about in the naming and holding of this moment. Speaking about trans and non-binary folks, Vaid Menon said, "The situation facing trans and gender non-conforming people in the United States right now is really bleak." And by the way, this was in 2022. "And I really want to have an earnest plea that people stop framing this as a minority issue. and reframe this as a universal attack on self-determination. Every one of us, they write, should be able to determine our own gender. No one else should be able to tell us what we should look like and how we should act and what we should do with our bodies. So we need you to show up at this moment, not just out of an ethic of allyship, they write. That doesn't feel like enough for me. But out of an insistence and your own dignity, your own capacity to transform, your own love of self. Indeed. We all have the right, don't we, and the chance to claim our whole self authentically. And your freedom to do so ends at my nose, as Benjamin Franklin rightly said of our individual freedoms in this country. And we talk about give us your tired masses yearning to be free, the promise of the woman with the torch offering safe harbor, the one my mother sailed by. So we have this larger vision, you and I, in our DNA about, or one vision we can turn toward, about what it means to welcome everyone into belonging and all the pain and insight and wisdom they bring, and the invitation to go deeper as a nation into what it means to learn to be inclusive. But right now, there is this creep of exclusion. Richard Rohr, who's a priest and a writer and a contemplative, writes about how and why exclusion works. Rohr writes, if our egos are in charge, we will find a disposable person or group on which to project our own problems. People who haven't come to at least a minimal awareness of their own shadow side will always find someone else to hate or fear or exclude. And sadly, hatred holds a group together much more quickly and easily than love and inclusivity. We're in this place of fighting for belonging. A world, again, that's trying to ask us to allow certain people to be disposable. It's always been the case, but more visibly, your work is always about working against that, Carmen. But the price of us giving up the task of honoring one another's deep human need to be unique and authentically their own and embrace the opposite, it's not a price any of us who are wise and compassionate are willing to pay. So it's time to push back against the backlash that's drawing the circle narrower and narrower and building walls and putting some people behind them as unwanted and unworthy, or asking us to dare to allow that to happen. And it's time to push back against control and punitive use of power, and not to say they, but to say we again and again, and to be joyful and curious about each other whenever we meet, and model a wondering stance of caring and invitation to everybody, especially those people who might be different from us, and to live inclusion and belonging and all that it asks of us, and to demand that the world does the same. As Carmen read in the reading this morning by Lewis Hyde about that trickster, There is a boundary, he wrote, where they'll be found, sometimes drawing the line, sometimes crossing it, sometimes erasing it, sometimes moving it, but always there, the gods of the threshold in all its forms. We are people who need to be willing to be the gods of the thresholds, guardians and warriors, as visible as the Sikh believer, unable and unwilling to hide from all who need reassurance that they are not alone, to set tables where no one goes hungry, because we've changed the way we set those tables. So may we be the ones who blur and move the lines and boundaries so that all are inside the circle of belonging as they should be. And everybody knows that they're loved for who they are authentically. Because we know that the invitation to do so will bless us far more richly than it blesses those we offer it to, as has always been the case. So this is just a reminder to go forth and love big and be visible and courageous and draw the circle wide.
As many of you know, I am co-founder of Faithful Fools, along with Kay Jorgensen, who was social justice minister of this congregation. In our beginning days, Reverend Yobanzi Johnson gifted us the book Trickster Makes This World by Lewis Hyde. Kay and Yobanzi both have passed on to be eternal lights, eternal tricksters. But when I first opened the book to the excerpt I'm about to read, it seemed to go to the heart of what was compelling Kay and I, and continues to compel Sam and me and the whole flock of faithful fools to this day. Every group has its sense of who is in and who is out, who is welcome and who is not, including often in our faith institutions. Kay and I were working with those boundaries here at the UU Church and within my Franciscan and Catholic congregations. It named for me a sensitivity I have had from an early age. I often noticed and was drawn to the ones who were left out, seemingly less valued. I trust I felt an identity as a female born into a world where greater value was placed on a male-born child. And noticing a clear distinction of value, not only between males and females, but white-skinned and brown or black-skinned, Catholics to Protestants, college-educated to trade workers, housed and unhoused, the list is infinite. In our practice of doing street retreats as faithful fools, we work with those edges, reinforced by our assumptions, our conditionings, our fears and our judgments, our ignorance, the media headlines. We go out into the Tenderloin community with the mantra, what holds me separate, what keeps me separated, as I walk the streets, what still connects me. These questions were given to 15 youth from the Bay Area UU congregations last Saturday as they did a street retreat as part of their coming of age program. The questions repeated over and over again as a mantra can serve us in any setting, in any encounter, where we recognize within ourselves or within a group that some are welcomed and some are not. Some voices are valued and some are not. As faithful fools, we often say, our work is to blur those boundaries. These words of Lewis Hyde speak to our heart as fools and challenge us to carry on to do the work to which we are called. From Trickster Makes This World. Trickster figures, Coyote, Hermes, Mercury, and more, and all tricksters are on the road. They are the lords of in-between. A trickster does not live near the hearth, does not live in the halls of justice, the soldier's tent, the shaman's huts, the monastery. Trickster is the spirit of the doorway leading out and of the crossroads at the edge of town, the ones where little markets spring up. They are the spirit of the road at dusk, the one that runs from one town to another and belongs to neither. The road that Trickster travels is a spirit road, as well as a road in fact. In short, the trickster is a boundary crosser. Every group has its edge, its sense of in and out, and the trickster is always there at the gates of the city and the gates of life, making sure there is commerce. They also attend the internal boundaries by which groups articulate their social life. We consistently distinguish right and wrong, sacred and profane, clean and dirty, male and female, young and old, living and dead. And in every case, Trickster will cross the line and confuse the distinction. Trickster is the creative idiot, the wise fool, the gray-haired baby, the cross-dresser, the speaker of sacred profanities. When someone's sense of honorable behavior has left them unable to act, the trickster will be there to suggest an amoral action, something right, wrong, that will get life going again. Trickster is a mythic embodiment of ambiguity and ambivalence, doubleness and duplicity, contradiction and paradox. The best way to describe trickster, to describe a fool, is to say simply that the boundary is where they will be found, sometimes drawing the line, sometimes crossing it, sometimes erasing it, or even moving it, but always there, the gods of the threshold in all its forms.